This month, I'm very happy to introduce Mary Warren, Associate Professor in the Department of Occupational Therapy at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. As Director of Graduate Certification in Low Vision Rehabilitation, Mary Warren's playing a big part in providing us with professionals who not only understand our general needs as aging seniors, but who also understand the special needs of those of us with the added encumbrance of low vision. And that's the topic for this month, the challenges we all face from not just visual impairment, but from multiple age-related disabilities. Mary, I'm going to turn the microphone over to you. Thank you for spending time with us today.
Thanks, Dan, for having me. I really appreciate this. When Dan asked me to do this presentation, there was absolutely no way I could say no, because he has been such a valuable resource to us in our graduate certificate program as we try to train our students to become competent providers of low vision services. So he's done a lot of favors for us, and I was very happy to be able to return the favor this time. I'm going to start with a slide that says that older people have a bad habit. They do not develop problems in one system alone. They develop problems in many systems. And this was a statement made by Stanley Weinapple, who is a physiatrist, a doctor who specializes in physical medicine and rehab, who also developed a low vision condition of his own. I'm fond of this quote because I think it kind of frames the challenges that older adults face as they age and with macular degeneration, so it frames our discussion. We'll go to the next slide. Older adults who have macular degeneration and other types of visual conditions are not immune to the other diseases of aging. In fact, when we look at the statistics of older adults who have vision loss, two-thirds of them have at least one other condition that's going to affect their ability to complete a daily activity. There are several large studies that are going on across the United States and Europe looking at how older adults age and the health of older adults. And when the researchers study these challenges, they group them into four categories. They look at the limitations in daily activities and group it into four categories. Category one are activities that require strength, balance, and endurance. And that's things like walking and doing housework and shopping and lifting and carrying. Then there are those activities that require thinking skills and memory, and those are the daily activities that involve things like handling your finances or figuring out your medication schedule or your email or using the internet. Then we have those activities that require upper body strength, and that's lifting, carrying, moving around, doing things while you're walking. And then those activities that require good flexibility and dexterity, so things like dressing and getting those buttons buttoned and the zippers up and getting your jewelry on and clipping your toenails and all of those other activities. So when they study limitations, they group by these four categories and look at the challenges that people have. Now, a lot of older adults, when you question them about the challenges that they're having, they'll attribute those problems just to aging. But what's been interesting is that most of the limitations that older adults have are caused by a specific medical condition. And that's an important thing to note, because it means that there might be a medical treatment available to a person. So if you are having difficulty in one of these areas, it may not be aging. It may be a condition that a doctor could treat, and you need to discuss it with the doctor. Now, when they look at the leading causes of disability, and by disability, we just mean when you have difficulty doing things. When they look at healthy adults, healthy older adults, and that's an older adult who overall would consider themselves to be healthy and active. The leading causes there are arthritis. Whenever they study, about 49% of people will complain of joint pain or that type of limitation. Heart and lung disease, that comes to shortness of breath and endurance, those types of things. Injuries, about 12% of older adults have had some type of injury, and I have an asterisk there under falls. Falls are probably the most troubling injury that older adults experience, because a lot of older adults experience falls. The rate is very high, and falls can cause significant challenges. You can wrench your back, you can break a hip, you can have a lot of other physical limitations that occur secondary to that fall. We're particularly concerned about the high rate of falls among persons who have vision loss, because they figure that vision contributes to about 40% of all falls. So when persons have vision loss, they even tend to fall more, so that injury factor becomes higher. And then depression is another cause of disability in healthy older adults, and it can be pretty high. Up to 20% of older adults can feel depression, and that, again, is something that needs to be addressed. What I really wanted to concentrate on, though, during this talk was common conditions that will annoy you as an older adult but won't necessarily disable you. These are the things that I can offer you advice on, and these are things that older adults complain about a lot, and there are things that we can do. So one is hearing loss. Another is unsteadiness when you move, kind of a balance issue. A third one is memory loss, particularly recalling details. Fourth is disrupted sleep. And the fifth is what I'm going to describe as a know-it-all whippersnapper problem. These are the ones that we're going to concentrate on today. The challenge with these conditions, even though they are an annoyance to an older adult rather than really being something that disables you, the challenge is that when you have vision loss, they're a little more than annoyance. They actually can create a disability and make your life miserable. So we'll start with hearing loss. Hearing loss is fairly common in older adults, and persons who already have some vision loss are much more dependent on hearing to follow conversations. You may have noticed that yourself. Since you can't see the face as well, you really tune in very closely into what the person is saying. Well, the challenge is if you have hearing loss, you're going to have more difficulty hearing the human voice, and it's going to be particularly difficult if there's a lot of extraneous noise in the environment. So if there's music or humming or something else going on, it's going to be much harder for you to participate. So the solution or the advice maybe that I can give you is to really be aware of this and aim for a quiet environment, especially when it's important that you be able to follow the conversation and be able to stay engaged in the conversation. So when you're having those important conversations of your life, the things where you really have to understand what's being said and you have to make decisions and you have to be involved, then don't hold them in public places or noisy restaurants or other places. Really aim for the quiet environment, recognizing that you need to be able to concentrate more on what person is saying, because you're going to pick up less about that person on their visual cues. And then don't be afraid to seek enhancement. I know when you have a vision impairment, you think, oh, I don't want to add a hearing aid onto this as well. Good grief. But hearing aids can be quite useful in those situations. And when you're more dependent on hearing, then having that kind of enhancement helps you quite a bit. The next area is unsteadiness. This is where you don't feel so steady on your feet and you're more likely to fall or lose your balance. And what we've found is that older adults become a lot more dependent on vision to compensate for their decreased balance. So as you get older, your vestibular system, which is the sensory system that keeps you upright in space and keeps you walking just fine, loses capability. It doesn't age very well. And as you lose your kind of natural sense of equilibrium, you become a lot more dependent on vision to keep you upright, to keep you safe. So the challenge is that a person who becomes more dependent on vision is going to be more likely to fall if there's inadequate or inaccurate visual input. And if you have vision loss, you're going to see things less clearly. So the solution that I can give you, or the suggestion I can give you, is that be very, very conscious of your environment and do whatever you can with your surroundings to make sure that you have the best possible lighting, that the objects that you deal with in a day, your remote control and your also on your computer, if all the things that you use have as high a contrast as possible so it's easy for you to see them. And especially that you reduce the clutter in what we would call your line of travel. These are the things in your path when you're moving from one spot in your home to another. Get rid of the clutter. Get rid of the throw rugs. Make sure that the chairs are pushed back. Get rid of any kind of little tables or things that you can catch your foot on. Just simplify your environment as much as you can, and that will help protect you from falls. That is probably the best advice I can give you overall, that you take a good hard look at your home and your surroundings and you make sure that they work for you. It's advice that people sometimes don't take because they get so used to their environment. They've grown up with it. Maybe you've lived in this house for 60 years or 5 years or 4 years, and you're not, you think you know where everything is and you feel comfortable, and you don't realize that you really are not seeing as well as you should. And this is an area where you have a lot of control because you can create a home environment that will work for you. The next area is memory loss. This is probably one of the most annoying things, and so I thought I'd spend a little more time on memory loss. They have studied memory processing for a very long time, and they know an awful lot about it, and it's kind of interesting how memory works. So I thought I'd give you just a little background on how memory processing occurs. Memory processing involves three storage systems, meaning that we store memories three ways. We have what's called a sensory perceptual memory, a short-term memory, and a long-term memory. So the first stage of memory, the first thing that occurs is what is called sensory perceptual processing. And what's happening here is that your brain is taking in the sights and the sounds and the touches and the smells of everything going on around you. And it will record it. It will hold it in storage for less than a second. And if that input is important to you and you attend to it, you pay attention to it, then the brain will code it, it'll package it, and it will transfer it to short-term memory. But if you don't pay attention to it in those few, you know, in that less than that second where it's recorded on your brain, then it's going to be discarded. The brain is just going to get rid of it, and it's going to be like it never happened. Well, the challenge for persons who have vision loss is right here. This is the challenge with memory, is that persons with vision loss often don't see details because they don't see well, and so that information is never stored in memory. Then they miss the information, and they can't recall it later because they never actually registered it to begin with. So because that is a problem, because you know that you're going to miss some of the details and that's going to make it harder for you to remember things, then we get back to changing your surroundings again and making sure that you create as visible an environment for yourself as possible so that you have good lighting and you have good contrast and you have very little clutter, and creating this kind of simplified, really visible environment is going to help you see what you need to see. If your brain can see it, your brain's going to register it and you're going to remember it better. Short-term memory is the next step. If things get recorded through sensory perceptual processing, then they go on into short-term memory. And short-term memory is very short-term. It lasts from 2 to 30 seconds. It's really kind of a complex ability because when you're storing short-term memory, you have to do two things at the same time. You have to attend to what you are seeing and hearing and smelling and feeling at this moment in time. And then you at the same time have to retrieve from your long-term memory images and information so that you can interpret what you're seeing. That way you can identify what you're seeing. So kind of think about it like you go in and you're going to meet your friend Myrna at a party, and you can kind of see an outline of a person who looks like Myrna 10 feet away from you that you're going to walk towards. And at the same time that you are seeing that person and processing them, you are also pulling out from your long-term memory what Myrna looks like, what her features are like, so that when you get over there, you can recognize her. And that's what short-term memory is. Well, both abilities, this ability to attend to what you're seeing and hearing, and the ability to retrieve something from long-term memory, decline with age. That's been shown in a lot of different research studies. But it declines mostly only in complex situations where there is a lot happening. So if you're in a very quiet environment, not a lot going on, not a lot of pattern there, not a lot of activity, short-term memory is going to work just fine. But when you find yourself in very complex situations where a lot is going on and you have to attend to a lot of different things, that's when short-term memory impairment occurs. And this is what puts older adults at risk for driving. It's not driving on quiet residential streets that are a challenge for older adults. It's driving when on busy streets with very complex intersections and that type of thing going on, because it's harder to store in memory. So the solution here, again, is awareness. Realize that you are at risk when you find yourself in a very calm or dynamic situation. Think of the busiest traffic intersection where you've got two lanes of traffic turning, making a left turn at the same time, and you maybe have four lanes merging in some place, and you just try to avoid those types of complex dynamic environments if you can. So if you're still driving, for example, you would try to avoid rush hour, or don't drive when the school buses are running or other things. You just try to make things more simple. I think this is something that older adults often just do innately. Realize that they handle situations much better when there's not a lot of extra things going on. And so this is just the science behind why you might be doing that. And then that takes us to long-term memory. Long-term memory is when you store memories for minutes to years to decades. So we have quite a bit of long-term memory storage in our brain. And there are three forms of long-term memory. There is episodic long-term memory, which is remembering facts and events. And then there's something called semantic long-term memory, which is storing knowledge and beliefs about these facts and events that you're recalling. And really, semantic memory is wisdom. It's learning from your experiences. So episodic, an example would be, episodic might be remembering that you had a fight with somebody or at one time. And the semantic part of that would be knowing that when you had that fight, it was important to kiss and make up afterwards, because that's what smoothed things over. So older adults are not so great sometimes on episodic memory. It's hard to remember facts and events and pull them out sometimes, but older adults are fabulous on semantic memory, fabulous on wisdom, because they've gained all of this knowledge and experience and can apply it. And then there's procedural, and procedural is knowing how to do things. So remembering how to operate your computer, remembering how to brush your teeth, remembering how to cook a turkey on Thanksgiving Day, it's procedural things. So when we're looking at long-term memory, there are actually two ways we retrieve our long-term memories. We do that by recall, and we do that by recognition. And recall is being able to just pull it out of your head, pull it out of your memory, remember what it is. And that's, again, hard. Actually, recall starts to decline in your 50s. You forget what it is that you were supposed to be doing. Why did I come into this room? What was I looking for? What was the name of that person? And it goes on and on like that. But even though it's hard as you get older to come up with those specific details, as long as you have good recognition of things, you can compensate for poor recall. So if you have the "why did I come into this room" experience, but then are able to look over at the telephone and go, "Oh, that's right, I came in here to call the pharmacist or call my doctor," then you're fine. It's just an annoying thing that really doesn't mean anything. And so loss of recall is expected, and you're not in trouble unless you start to recognize things. You lose recognition as well. If you get to the stage of looking at something and saying, "What is this?" or "Who are you?" then you're in a little bit more trouble with your memory. But otherwise, it's just a natural change that occurs. So the solution to problems with recalling memory and that type of thing is pretty simple, and there's a lot of research to back it up, and that's use it or lose it. They have done lots of studies at this point to show that if you engage in activities that hone your recall skills, if you do crossword puzzles, if you play Scrabble, if you do word games, if you play bridge, if you do Jeopardy, if you do Trivial Pursuit, all of those types of things are really exercising your brain and really helping you maintain your ability to recall things. So just like taking a walk is daily exercise for your body, practicing recall skills is exercise for your brain. Rehearsing is another good solution. Practicing people's names over and over. I'm chuckling because I have to do this a lot myself. Just practice to remember their names. And then using a technique that a lot of us use where we try to connect new bits of information logically so we can see a relationship. So this would be, you meet Joe, and Joe is the same name as your barber, and your barber is also bald, and this new Joe you met is bald, so you can remember his name by thinking of your barber. Older adults are actually really good at doing that kind of connection and the ability to see relationships between things because they have so much experience and such good wisdom, again, such good semantic knowledge. And that brings us to the last one. I thought I would bring up fatigue because it's a big complaint among all adults, regardless of age. We have difficulty getting to sleep, and we have difficulty staying asleep. And a lot of times when they look at fatigue, there is an underlying cause, and that's the point that I want to make. Again, there's this thought that, well, I'm older, so I'm going to be tired. But actually, there could be a medical reason for this fatigue. You could have hypothyroid condition, which is more common as you get older. You could have some kind of heart problem. It's more common. You might be taking a medication in the wrong amount or in the wrong combination with something, and that can be making you tired. You might have a condition known as sleep apnea, which can be very significant in that it could cause stroke and other types of problems. Or you might be experiencing some depression. So don't just put up with fatigue. Explore it. Okay? The solution there is to check with your doctor and make sure that there is nothing wrong. One thing to your doctor is to reduce the amount of effort you put into seeing things. And this is one of the things that I have noticed over the years as in working with older adults who don't see very well, is that if you don't change your environment, if you don't change your surroundings and improve the lighting inside your house and make sure there's good contrast and get rid of the clutter, and use your magnifiers as they're prescribed, if you keep trying to do things the way you always did them, without any modification at all, you put a lot of mental energy into getting through the day. And you may say to yourself, well, I don't need a crutch. These are crutches. I'm not going to use a crutch. I can shoulder my way through this. But on the other side, what's going to happen is you're going to put so much effort into what you're doing, you're going to get tired. It contributes to your fatigue. You need to kind of think of endurance sometimes as a finite thing. You only have so much of it. And if you're going to spend all of your energy, all of your endurance reading the newspaper, then there's just not going to be much left for walking the dog and doing some of the other things that you want to do. So accept these modifications and realize that the modifications are not a sign of weakness or a sign that you're getting worse. They're a way to help you control things so that you have the energy to do what you want to do. And then the last thing I couldn't resist putting in there, and that was to embrace the nap. Power napping is getting a lot of buzz these days as being something that we should all be doing. We should all be taking a nap in the afternoon. We'd all be much better if we did. And I think being able to take a nap is probably the strongest desire of any person who works all the time. If you think back to your working days, you would have given anything to be able to take an afternoon nap. So take a nap. Enjoy it. If you're in retirement, now you can do it and realize that it is very healthy for your body to take the 20 or 30 minute power nap. Nothing wrong with that. In fact, it's a good idea. This one I'm going to say with kind of tongue-in-cheek, and that's the know-it-all whippersnapper challenge, the final annoyance. Successful aging requires that you have a team of people to help you. This is the concept that we're talking about these days, that you don't try to go into it on your own. You get a team of people to help you adjust. And there are plenty of professionals out there who can help you. There are occupational therapists, physical therapists, personal trainers, geriatricians, psychologists, certified low vision therapists. There are lots of people who have been well trained to help. And so my advice to you is just to keep an open mind. Realize that some of the best advice is going to come from some of the youngest professionals. I know if you're 80 years old, it's hard to take advice from somebody who's 24, but realize that person who's just gotten that degree in occupational therapy or just gotten that degree in physical therapy or has only worked a few years has very recent knowledge and can help you. So my advice is the advice that my dad always gave me. My dad was a football coach, and he always said, be coachable, be coachable, be coachable, which means that you recognize that somebody can help you and you accept their advice and you take it. Along that line, too, though, don't be gullible. I guess be coachable but not gullible. Be savvy and check credentials. One of the things that I want you to think about is realize that there are professionals out there trained to work with you, but a salesperson is not a professional. The primary agenda of any salesperson is to sell you something. And where I find people will kind of skirt around professionals, they don't want to have an occupational therapist come and work with them, they'll embrace the person who's selling the CCTV and think that they know everything that you need to have. And you can be taken advantage of in that situation. So keep an open mind, but be savvy, check credentials, and above all, be coachable about things. But I have one last final thought. What I have learned, I'm currently finishing a PhD in health promotion and health education. And one of the things that I have learned in my studies that has really stuck home with me as a therapist is that a lot of these diseases that affect older adults, heart disease, diabetes, arthritis, even macular degeneration, low vision, are all related to diet and exercise. How good your diet is, how much you exercise. And that diet and exercise do an awful lot to help minimize the impact of these diseases and keep them from getting worse. And there's a growing body of literature and knowledge about that. So vision loss is a really good excuse for not exercising. You can't see well and you have to be concerned about your safety. So it's very easy to say, I can't go out and I can't walk the dog or I can't walk on the track because I can't see where I'm going. But it is actually a deadly decision. if you're already prone to vision loss, you've already got macular degeneration, you've already got diabetes, you've already got heart disease, then you should be exercising and eating right. It's the only thing that's really in your control that will help you get better or keep from getting worse. And the research is very, very clear on this. So the research says exercise daily, embrace a diet heavy on the fruits and vegetables, particularly if you have vision loss. And I think one of our big roles in the next few years as therapists is to find ways that you all can exercise more successfully and get engaged in things. Thank you, and if you have any questions for me, I'd be willing to answer, help in any way I can.